We'll call our last case of the day, Saravia v. Attorney General of the United States, number 17-2234.
Hey, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Gregory Bishoping, and I represent Alejandro Saravia. If it pleases the Court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
That would be granted.
Honors, despite this Court's ruling in Vail de Villezo Galdames, the CIA has steadfastly refused to even acknowledge that it has changed the test for particular sessions.
Say that again?
Go ahead.
The BIA has failed to acknowledge that it's even changed the test for a particular social group.
Well, I don't mean to throw you a curveball, but maybe we could deal with what the Attorney General did the other day, the AV case.
Sure.
I'm sure you've seen it, right?
Yes.
Okay. How does that play into our analysis now?
Well, I think that decision is a perfect example of the results-driven nature of this particularity and social distinction test. There, the Attorney General prejudged two entire classes of applicants, domestic violence victims, and gang-related violence applicants. And, in fact, gang-related violence applicants were not in dispute in that case.
If that's all true, isn't it entitled to a high degree of deference?
It's entitled to the Chevron framework of deference, which, under the first prong, asks whether or not the statute is ambiguous, and this particular part of the statute has been found to be ambiguous. This particular part of the statute has been found to be ambiguous. Now, the second prong of Chevron asks, is this interpretation reasonable? And in Vail de Villezo Galdames, this court found that the interpretation of the statute to require particularity and social distinction was not reasonable because it was a change from the prior standard set under Acosta, which required only an immutable characteristic, and the BIA had not provided a reasoned explanation for that change, and in providing that reasoned explanation, provided applicants clarity on what would be required, such as clarifying what's good precedent, what's bad precedent.
So this AB case is not that, I guess? It doesn't meet that standard?
No, and in fact, this
AB... Yeah, but didn't they recognize, you started off with pointing out, well, they never really said we changed anything. Didn't the Attorney General's opinion at least acknowledge there has been a change here?
It does something similar to what's been done in MEVG and other of the BIA's decisions, which is say that we've refined this over time, that going to the heart of the initial Acosta standard, this provides clarity, but it doesn't acknowledge that it's a change, and what's more important, it doesn't clarify what's good precedent and what's bad precedent, and this court held that there is contradictory precedent coming from the Acosta standards, such as matter of Kasinga, which was young women who oppose female genital mutilation and who have not experienced it. This court found, based on that record, that there was no evidence that that group was socially distinct in any way. And what the BIA has effectively done since is try to rewrite its prior decisions, saying that, well, there could have been social distinction there, when in fact the records of those cases, I think the other cases cited in Vail de Villezo were matter of Fuentes and matter of Togo Alfonso, where there was no record of social distinction, and yet the BIA goes back and says, well, there could have been, so it's consistent.
Now, as I understand it, these statutes are always written in terms of where the Attorney General can grant asylum and so forth, and the BIA is in effect inferior to the Attorney General. Is that right?
So in certain circumstances, that's right. Under a pure asylum claim, the Attorney General has discretion to deny asylum. However, this is a withholding of removal, which has a higher burdens of proof, and therefore, if the standard is met, mandates withholding of removal. So there's less discretion in the final determination. Does that answer your question?
I'm not sure. I frankly haven't had a chance. I just got it to read the Attorney General's opinion. I'm going to read it after this argument.
In the withholding of removal context, hasn't it always been the case in regards to persecution that there be government involvement in the persecution?
There's a requirement that the government isn't able to control.
For purposes of asylum.
For purposes of asylum, I believe the requirement is that the government isn't able to control the persecuting party, which I wasn't even
well,
finding.
The government condones the private actions or that, is not able to control it. Don't you have to show those two things before you can get asylum on grounds of persecution?
I believe you do. Now, the IJ and the BIA didn't find that to be a problem with this case at hand.
I'm reading the Attorney General's, I guess you could call it decision in the BIA.
Yes. Yeah.
If we disagree with you and we defer to what the Attorney General and or the BIA has done, can you still prevail?
So are you saying that if you find that particularity and social distinction are valid?
Well, at least the way they view it.
Right. Yes, I believe it still requires reversal and remand. The BIA also mischaracterized Mr. Saravia's particular social group. They described it as him as part of a social group of individuals looked at to be recruited into MS-13, when in fact the particular social group he had defined was young men targeted for recruitment who resist recruitment and oppose gang violence and are persecuted on account of that social group.
Doesn't sound like much of a difference to me. What's the difference?
I mean, one is very vague and general and retracted, whereas this one that we're describing describes a past act on the part and a belief on the part of Mr. Saravia, that of opposition to gang violence and active resistance to gang violence versus purely the actions of another of looking at you to be recruited. And in fact, one of the things that the IJ and BIA found was no nexus between pro-social group and the persecution he suffered. Now, this is also infected by this wrongful characterization of his particular social group, but it's also counter to the vast weight of the evidence that was seen in the record. In fact, the IJ found that the BIA offered Mr. Saravia an ultimatum of either join our gang, pay us $15,000, or we will kill you. Now, this court has recently overturned three BIA decisions on the grounds of nexus, finding that their nexus determination was inaccurate. Those were Hernandez, Aguilar, and Valdivieso in the first instance before this court. And warrants remand on that issue as well here.
I actually was focusing in this case on the corroboration issue, which I thought was, unfortunately, the immigration judge heard testimony and then said you didn't corroborate it without telling the petitioner what he should have corroborated, and I thought that was weird. But then I got the Attorney General's memo and read this, and I wonder if this pretty much dictates the result in the case, as opposed to the corroboration issue.
Yeah. So so are you asking about the corroboration issue right now, or are you asking more about the Attorney
General's?
Well,
we've already, I think, addressed the corroboration issue. I thought that that was pretty much in your favor until I got the Attorney General's memo. So I'm pretty much focusing on that at the moment, and trying to determine just how it's applied in your case, how it's applied in many of these cases.
So the Attorney General's
decision, with regard to the deference that we give the Attorney General.
Sure. So the Attorney General's decision really doesn't change the standard any. It basically reiterates the standard and says that matter of ARCG is overturned because it wasn't in line with that standard. And we actually assert the same thing in our brief. We say matter of ARCG is one of many examples of inconsistency with this standard. Now, in so doing, he offers additional dicta that no victim of domestic violence and likely no victim of gang violence would qualify, which isn't entitled to deference.
Well, unless you show that the government condoned the private actions, or that it was unwilling to protect the victims.
What about here? Is that met?
The social...
No, actually what Judge Flint has just said about the government either condoning or not protecting.
Yes, that's more than met here. There's significant evidence put forward that all these were reported, numerous instances were reported to police with nothing happening, that him and his family were threatened that if they went to the police, there would be significant retaliation, which they believed and didn't go to the police on.
But did the IJ render any findings on this?
The IJ didn't rule on this. The best of my recollection didn't rule one way or the other, effectively, I believe, conceding that there was a finding of no ability to control the
case. There were some tragedies in this case, I thought. A killing or two, relatives of the petitioner. But again, the question remains, was did the government condone that conduct? Or were they complicit? And I don't see any evidence here that that's the case.
They don't have to be explicitly complicit. To be the requirement of complicity comes at the Convention Against Torture.
Just focus on condoning as opposed to being complicit.
For withholding removal, they don't have to necessarily even condone. They just have to be unable to control. The condoning complicitness comes in the Convention Against Torture analysis, and withholding of removal is just unable to control. It's a somewhat lower standard.
The matter of AB references condone the private actions.
Okay.
Or demonstrate an inability to protect the victim.
Okay, that was the language I was focusing on, was the inability to control, which was, I believe, at least an implicit finding by the IJ in this case. I would also note that the inconsistency between the particularity and social distinction requirements and the Acosta standard of immutability is seen in this court's and the BIA's interpretation of other categories of protection from removal, such as religion and political opinion. In those cases, there's been zero requirement of social distinction, which this court or the BIA ruled in Matter of Acosta that it was interpreting the statute according to a justum generis meaning of like kind. And this change in standard brings particular social group of a different kind than these other requirements. For instance, Matter of SA, the BIA recognized a protectable religion of a young woman who had more progressive Muslim beliefs than her father, which is in no way socially distinct. And similarly, in imputed political opinion cases, which this court recognizes, those cases turn solely on the actions and beliefs of the persecutors in perceiving a political opinion in the persecuted.
In terms of a remedy, could you give us an explicit remedy that you're seeking?
Yes.
I heard you say remand to the BIA, which in turn will remand to the immigration judge.
Precisely.
For what remedy?
Upholding the court's decision to fail the VSO, granting no Chevron deference to particularity and social distinction as requirements of a particular social group, so to either adjudicate under the Acosta standard or to provide a principled reason and explanation of the new test, to also reverse on nexus and corroboration, which we didn't get to, but in corroboration, the requested testimony was, in fact, corroborated in the report. So to reverse on those grounds as well.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good afternoon. Attorney Sabatino F. Leo on behalf of the United States Attorney General. I think that the record is clear and that the case law is clear that in MEVR and MEVG and WGR that the Attorney General via the BIA specifically refined the test and the concerns that this court had in Valdiviezos.
Is it a new test or is it a restatement of old cases?
Your Honor, it is simply a refinement. And I think what we really need to step back for a moment is look at what Valdiviezos said and specifically what Judge Hardiman indicated in his concurrence is that there really was this additional step of social visibility, which was interpreted by this court as being ocular visibility. Right. Can we see the difference? And Judge Hardiman had the entire panel had very great pains in that. And I think that's really the difference is that they went great pains to having a concern with that was ocular visibility would in event upend all these previous particular social groups for purposes of asylum, withholding of removal. And what MEVG and WGR do is they come in and they say, whoa, we didn't never meant ocular visibility, and we used a poor phrase by discussing social visibility. What that phrase really meant was social distinction. And what social distinction means, and as MEVG and WGR and the board rectifies, is that what it means is, does society perceive this group as a group? And then looking backwards, what the BIA did in those cases, what look at the particular social groups that they had previously found.
By group, you mean the gangs that try to recruit you and things like that. According to the petitioner here, subject you to violence and those kinds of things.
I think what the board does is say those with regard to particularity and social distinction, that those are not socially distinct groups. Individuals, and I think what the Attorney General does a good job is in matter of AB, is says particular social groups was never meant to remedy the ills of the entire world. Our asylum and withholding was never meant to do that. In particular social group, as sort of the evidence and the legacy makes clear, is that it was never a catch-all. It didn't mean race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or particular social group, which is everything else. It really needed to be something particular.
Well, I've heard of a group called MR or M13 or something. I mean, it refers to a group that are hell-bent on violence and always getting the recruits via killing, intimidation, etc.
Your Honor is viewing it in the eyes of the persecutors versus those who are being persecuted. The group, the particular social group, is not MS-13. That is the group which we can all sit here and agree that that is a group. Mara Salvatrucha 13 is a heinous gang violent group. It's whether or not those young men being recruited by MS-13, are they socially distinct? Are they particular with respect for purposes of withholding asylum, particularly with regard to particular social groups? And I think what the board says here is they're not, because the entire community or the entire nations in El Salvador.
So I'm trying to follow you, but what we're looking for is a group of people that would be persecuted or the targets of the gang violence. We don't look at the persecutors, which would be the group of the of those that are seeking to recruit.
What the board has said is that in order to define particular social group, what we need to look is those being persecuted. Are they socially distinct?
Not the persecutors.
Not the persecutors. Now, there's the persecutors.
But that doesn't make sense. I mean, you're trying to get away from the persecutors, and that's why you flee that country. That's why you're seeking asylum, because you're trying to get away.
And I understand Your Honor's concern, but I think in looking at that, if we were to perceive or view the INA particular social group aspect of it within the eyes of the persecutor, then it would engulf the definition of particular social group, meaning every particular social group is persecuted on account of a particular social group, which would render the on account of language in the statute superfluous. And I think that's what the board has done specifically to state this on account of language is a separate and distinct delineation. You have a particular social group. Now let's go ahead and make that determination of whether or not this particular social group, common immutable characteristics, particularity, social distinction, we have our group. Is that group being persecuted on account of a protected ground?
So when the Attorney General says that the applicant must show that the government condoned the private actions, that refers to the persecuted or the persecutor?
That refers to the persecutor. So we're in a situation, is the government condoning, unable, or unwilling to protect those that are being persecuted? There has to be that requirement there. It's not simply, and I think what the board does ad nauseum, and this court has continued to affirm those cases with regard to victims of general criminal strife that are not persecuted on account of a particular social group or the other group set forth in the statute. And what the Attorney General is saying is delineating that in order to establish asylum withholding of removal, you mentioned the quotation from the Attorney General condoning, unable or unwilling. And I think that is really the delineation when it comes to an applicant seeking asylum, which is not here, not the issue in this case, but speaking to your question, as well as withholding of removal. Is that element there? And for purposes of a particular social group, the only way to interpret this particular statute, as I think the AG says in matter of AB, as well as the board, MEVG and WGR, says we need to look at whether or not this is a particular social group. Now, this court has already indicated in its 5-10 decision that particular social group, that language is ambiguous, therefore subject to the deference of the Attorney General, which was granted deference in matter of Acosta.
What would be your request? What would you be asking us to do in this case, given the Attorney General's recent...
I would think that in this particular case that this court would grant Chevron deference to the agency's interpretation of particular social group.
Well, now, we haven't heard you talk about the Valdezzo-Galamez case much. Doesn't that point in a different direction in terms of the deference we ought to give to the different things you're citing?
Well, I think what's important about Valdivieso was that what the concern was there is the judges viewed it as a change to the standard.
Okay.
Social distinction, what they looked at is social visibility. And as a result, they kicked it back and said, listen, we're remanding to the agency. What do you mean social visibility? Because if we look at social visibility, it doesn't line up with these line of cases with regard to a particular social group. And what the agency does, I think, is respond directly. I know there's discussion, a principled rationale. And I think they take MEVG and its companion case in WGR and specifically answer and rectify the concerns of this court in Valdivieso, so specifically with regard to that ocular visibility. Again, looking at X and knowing that X is a member of a particular social group. That's wrong. That was not what the agency meant. And I think what the agency does a good job at is it comes in and it states, we never meant ocular visibility. Because if we did, admittedly, I think they fall on their sword, so to speak, then it wouldn't line up with our particular social group cases we've done in the past. What we meant was social distinction.
So that brings us then to what the Attorney General did 2 days ago. Judge Greenberg asked a good question. You got the BIA, and then you've got the Attorney General. Mm-hmm. Is the Attorney General's opinion entitled to even greater deference? How do we deal with that?
Well, the statute delegates authority to the executive agency, the Attorney General, for purposes of this for immigration.
Right.
And what the Attorney General did was delegate his or her authority to the board and the immigration judge for purposes of. Under the immigration and nationality, or purposes of immigration authority. So, obviously, when the cabinet level matter AB Attorney General speaks, this court should afford deference to it. Whether or not it's afforded a greater amount of deference, I think that the Chevron deference application is really the correct route to go, for the simple fact that is there an ambiguous statute? We've already made that determination in Fatim with regard to a particular social group. And then the subsequent question really is this a permissible construction of a statute? And permissible construction meaning, is it arbitrary? Is it capricious? Is it manifestly contrary to law?
Are you suggesting that the court decide the case, or that the agency decide the case, or that the Attorney General's statement is final?
I think this court should fall in line with, I believe there's 8 other circuits that state specifically that the board's interpretation, the agency's, for lack of a better term, the agency's interpretation of a particular social group to include common immutable characteristics, particularity, and social distinction warrants Chevron deference. And in my opinion, that effectively ends this case, because if there's no particular social group, this individual is not qualified for withholding of removal. For purposes of withholding, obviously, Convention Against Torture is a different aspect of it.
Can I just shift you a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
about corroboration. It seems, looking at our precedent, Abdullahi and I guess other things, mm-hmm. The IJ didn't really match up, did he?
Well, I think in this particular situation, with regard to corroboration, we have evidence on the record in which the immigration judge, not only does the immigration judge, and with respect to discusses Abdullahi as well as Sandy in the decision, we have on the record discussion between the immigration judge, counsel, as well as petitioner, respondent at that particular hearing, with regard to this lack of corroboration, and a response therefrom. Now, I must say that for purposes of immigration judge hearings, there's a lot of read up through a lot of cases, and this is a situation in which we have literally a situation, well, why did you not bring, have a letter or testimony from your mother, letter or testimony from your brother? And the attorney, both the petitioner in that particular case, in that situation states, well, we were never told to bring my mother, and then the attorney representing basically falls on his sword, saying,
if the IJ is going to make a decision on the basis of corroboration, we have said you have to tell the petitioner what needs corroboration so that you can prepare to bring it. And in this case, apparently his mother was available to testify, mm-hmm. but then the IJ made a decision that had to do with that.
Petitioner was pressed by the immigration judge on the record, petitioner's counsel. Petitioner's counsel said, hey, we have absolutely no excuse for that. And counsel effectively fell on their sword, did not propose to offer, did not propose a continuance, did not take any. Now, hear me out.
The IJ has to say that matter needs to be corroborated.
Well, I think he says on the record with regard to corroboration specifically, and this is assuming we get to corroboration for purposes of this decision, but specifically with regard to the mother and the half-brother, no, there being no letters and there being no evidence. And I think it's important to recognize, and again, I think this court as well as numerous circuit courts have indicated, perhaps this is a tactical decision by counsel not to present evidence in response. I don't know. Perhaps the mother wasn't prepared to corroborate the testimony. Perhaps the half-brother wasn't prepared to corroborate. We can't now, at a 20,000-foot level, now question what it could conceivably have been a tactical decision. I will say to this court, as an officer of this court, we're looking at a situation in which we have an immigration judge looking at the petitioner and petitioner's counsel, specifically inquiring with regard to corroboration, and no subsequent corroboration being submitted. Again, we don't believe as the Attorney General that you even get there, because petitioner's particular social group is not a particular social group, and this court should grant deference to the agency's decision with regard to particular social groups, and as a result, that ends there for purposes of his claim for withholding of removal.
You don't have much time. You better wrap it up soon, I guess.
Okay, Your Honor. So in short, we think it's clear that the MEVG and WGR, the board's decision, now piggybacked by the AB decision by the Attorney General, make it abundantly clear that for purposes of a particular social group, the particular social group is ambiguous, and that this court should defer to the agency's definition, as it's neither arbitrary nor capricious nor manifestly contrary to law.
Your request, Mr. Leo, is that we decide the case, opposed to sending it back to the IJ, the BIA?
I think that all this court needs to do is defer. If this court defers to the, if we grant Chevron deference to the board's decision in this particular case, then deny the petition, and then that would be it, in our opinion. You should deny the petition. Thank you.
Thank you, Castle. We'll hear rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd just like to respond briefly on a couple points. One, to address Judge Fuentes, your earlier questions about the requirement of condoning. That was
linked from. I just want to ask: Is this Mr. Shopping?
Yes.
Okay.
To respond briefly to your earlier questions, that was distinct because in asylum, there's a different definition of persecution that includes this language of condoning or unable to control.
whereas in withholding of removal, there is no such language in the definition of persecution. And that decision was in the asylum context. I would also note, in response to opposing counsel's discussion of ocular visibility, that argument was addressed in Valde Viejo Galdamez. There, the court heard this exact argument and ruled that that was a gloss with what the BIA was actually doing, because in RCA, which was one of the first cases that applied this new test, they explicitly looked for ocular visibility. And even if this standard is now interpreted to not require ocular visibility, non-ocular social distinction is still at odds with the records that were developed in those earlier Acosta standard cases. Next, the opposing counsel discusses the persecutor's perspective in response to Your Honor's questions. And I believe one of the biggest problems with this new test for particularity and social distinction is the changing importance that the BIA gives to the persecutor's perspective in defining what is a particular social group. In early cases, like in RCA, the board looks to the persecutors to say, is this group distinct? And in later cases, it looks to society to ask
but
whether...
Isn't it entitled to refine its approach?
Yes, but applicants are entitled to know how to plead their case. They should know what the standard is so that they can develop the record accordingly to meet that. Lastly, corroboration was discussed, and I would like to note that I think one of the biggest problems with the corroboration analysis below was, on top of the notice issue, was the fact that the corroboration that was requested was, in fact, provided. A psychologist interviewed Mr. Sarabia's mother and submitted to the court was the interview where she corroborated the exact testimony that was requested. The psychologist wrote, Ms. Melendez stated that in February 2016 she received a call from an unknown number. The caller said, Ms. Melendez, is it true that your son is coming to El Salvador? Because if Alejandro is coming, we have to negotiate, or do you know what is going to happen to him? This shows a failure to meet Abdullahi, which says the IJ has to ask, is the evidence already corroborated? If Your Honor have no further questions, I believe that concludes my...
All right, counsel, thank you so much. First off, I just want to thank counsel and his colleagues over here for taking on this case pro bono. And I hope Mr. Sarabia knows how well he's been represented. We also want to thank the government. Briefing and argument were excellent here. We'll take the case under advisement and ask that the clerk adjourn court. We would like to greet you at sidebar as well. So thank you.
Please rise. This court stands adjourned until Thursday, June 14th at 9:30 a.m.